Hello everybody, this is BitNote. We'll be playing video game music and I hope you stay listening. David Collins, thank you. Alright, I've got some nice songs on tonight and I think I'll start off with one from a nice game. This is a game that's fun. It kind of passed under the radar, but it kind of didn't, you know. I mean, if you were really into your games, you may know of this one, have played it. For my own part, I played it. I really enjoyed it. I thought I had a great sense of humor. And, hey, listen to some of its music. Hope you enjoy. So that was from MDK2, which was developed by BioWare. Now, BioWare are more meant for their epic RPGs, where you go on huge quests and are able to choose whether you want to be good or evil. But essentially, more like Mass Effect or Baldur's Gate. But essentially, this is MDK2 is actually more of a action game. Really, it's got a really funny gameplay to it as well. You basically can choose. It alternates between three characters. One of them is a janitor. He literally is only trying to save the world from aliens because he's basically been forced in a situation where he really doesn't have any option. He's been given this really cool super suit that lets him shoot sniper rifle bullets, and he sort of goes along with it because it's slightly better than the alternative. And at one point during the game, he ends up in his boxer shorts. The other thing is a crazy scientist. And this is fun. He actually is slightly crazy. He's the one who's trying to say that we should take down the aliens. And also, he builds the sniper suit. And he also tries to have his own weapon, which basically involves taking a radioactive toaster, shoving toast in it, and shooting the toast at the aliens. It gets pretty crazy. And last up, of course, there is a robotic six-legged dog, which is able to hence walk on two legs and shoot at the same with four weapons simultaneously. As you can sort of see, that's the game sort of has a crazy sense of humor, but also varied gameplay. I mean, you know, being the sniper is fine, you shoot them all from a distance. Being the scientist is good because you grab a whole lot of crazy items, combine them together in crazy ways, and start defeating the enemies with crazy inventions. And the dog is good because you just unload with molten lead at absolutely every single object that comes even close towards you. The game's got a kind of a dark art style, to be honest, but it's largely set in a space station and in outer space and dealing with the aliens, but it's also got very quirky sort of characters to it and which makes it all the more fun. It's I suppose what I remember most about it is that it's a game that doesn't try to be too serious, but it's also tries to keep things varied enough, and you get to do some pretty cool stuff during the game. So yes, I would recommend MDK2. I think it's been released once or twice. It's maybe not the best game in the world, but definitely a lot of fun in its own regard. Alright, let's move on to another thing. I'm going to move on to a track from probably one of my childhood favourite video games. I hope you enjoy. That little fun track was from the... Ooh, actually, I just forgot. I didn't actually give the composers of the previous track. They were Jesper Keid, Albert Olsen, and Raymond Watts, who's from the band Pig. But that was from the MDK soundtrack. The track I've just played was actually composed by Hiseyoku Ogura, Yasuko Yamada, and Yoshia Watanabe. And it's from the New Zealand Story by Taito. The New Zealand Story, first in the arcade and then, like a lot of popular games, on everything from the Super, from the Nintendo, Mega Drive, and Amiga, which is what I played it on, is this classic game where you play a Kiwi whose friends have been kidnapped. Well, friends, cousins, family, the whole of them have been kidnapped by a great big walrus. And this is displayed in the opening cutscene, which was the height of video game storytelling at the time. Well, actually, that's kind of a bit false. I'm kind of ignoring the whole text adventures and stuff. But for a platforming game at the time it was, and even nowadays it kind of follows, you have to go on a quest all the way across New Zealand in order to rescue your family members and bring that great big walrus to justice. It's a fun game. I played it when I was so young, because this was literally my first exposure to what the country of New Zealand was actually about. And actually, each time, each level, you see this great big map of New Zealand and an indicator of where you are in the country. So you start off in, I think, the Hootamore Caves, and you keep going down, and one stage you get to Cook Strait and everything. And the game is so... It's such a simple game in a lot of ways. It's like basic platforming. You jump through platforms, you shoot, but it's just so much fun. I mean, you control this nice little cute yellow little Kiwi with apparently running shoes, and you jump on platforms, and his primary weapon is a bow and arrow, and there are all these colourful, bright enemies, and at the end of each level, you have to rescue a family member by just touching the cage, and it's just... It's just a lot of fun, and it's bright and colourful, and it's got that chirpy, upbeat tune to it the whole time. So, I mean, it's just... And the level's thrown a lot of diversity. You can do a lot of fun stuff in it. You get a couple of weapon upgrades, and there are these flying vehicles you can get at certain stages and stuff. And, oh boy, it was just... It seemed like every level was throwing something new or fun and different at you. And that's what we loved about it. And of course, one thing, especially that a lot of more recent games aren't that good at, secrets. I mean, essentially, all the levels are like practically flooded with all these warp zones, which are basically these areas where if you shoot something at, your arrow disappears. And if you shoot a few more time, suddenly this great big fan appears. And if you jump into it, you get warped to a later level, or maybe a different section of this level, or maybe a secret area or whatever. I mean... This is the whole thing. If you're just playing the game straightforward, going through each level, you know, that's fun enough. But if you actually try to figure out where all the warp zones are, and just try to figure out, you know, because, I mean, like, it's kind of funny. I mean, at one of the very early levels, you get a warp zone to a secret area. And then you get the secret area, and when you get out of the secret area, you can either go into a boss fight, but if you stay in the secret area, you can find another warp zone and that'll take you somewhere else. So it's pretty challenging, but a lot of fun, and like great sense of exploration. It's kind of funny. I remember saying to my brother at the time, you know, wait a sec, if you like skip all these levels, what happens to your family members in all the cages and the levels you skip? And I don't know, he said, you asked me that question already, and we kind of figured that they rescue themselves, however that works. Or maybe after you defeat the walrus, you go back and save them all back then. But it's just a fun game, bright and colourful, a lot of energy to it. It got re-released on a few platforms, and one of the greatest moments, I found out there was a Taito collection for the Xbox a while back, and boy, I mean, it had a lot of other classic hits. Bubble Bobble, too. I should play the music from that sometimes. But it was just great playing it again and just being that little yellow Kiwi and jumping around. And it's just a fun game. I mean, there's just so much activity. It's got a bright world and a lot of things. And you've got to rescue your family and defeat the old walrus. So, yeah. So, time for our next game. And this is a fun one. Certainly good memories associated with this one. I hope you enjoy. That, my friends, was King's Bounty, The Legend. That what you heard right there was composed by Lind Erebros, and the game itself was developed by Katarai Interactive. Now, boys, King's Bounty, The Legend, was one I bought off a whim. I actually learned online. I learned a little later that it's actually based on a game that was released about 18 years ago, thereabouts. So, I mean, people talk about games being revived after a period of time. I hadn't even actually heard of the King's Bounty before then, but it was pretty popular, and apparently it played a lot of influence into the Might and Magic series of video games, so there's that. But I hadn't really heard of it, and so I played it, and boy, I couldn't finish this game, and it wasn't because it wasn't good. It was definitely good. It wasn't because I found it difficult. I found the good difficulty curve actually really good. I couldn't finish this game because it got too addicting. I mean, I'm serious. I would basically sit down and think, I know what I'll play. I'll play King's Bounty, The Legend. That's a fun game. So I'd sit down at my computer at maybe 10 or maybe 11, a little late, all right, start playing it, have my little character go on these great adventures with all these monsters, and then I'd start to hear something else, birdsong, and I would look over at the window shutters and I would see dawn coming through, and I'd think to myself, you know, maybe it wasn't very healthy and how I spent the last several hours of my life. Now, to be honest, any gamer knows that sometimes you get really hooked up in a game and that you're really going to just keep at it and it just hooks you on. But I think every gamer also knows that sometimes you got to do it the limit. And I think about the fourth or maybe fifth time that this happened. And, you know, maybe I'm not... Now, if you do it a little more than that, that's your own decision. But for me, I decided, you know, maybe it's time I actually stop playing this game. So fortunately, I'd reached a part in the game which I had a little bit of trouble getting forward. And the scenery was repeating a little more than normal. So I was able to just quickly delete the game and just force myself just to purge it from my memory and go on happily, not spending my entire time nights playing that specific video game at least. But no, it was just, how do I describe the bits I did play? It was beautiful. I mean, for a start, I don't know if anyone's following video game trends, but there's this trend to make everything dark and grey, blah, blah, blah. It's been spoken about to death. But this game, you're talking about lush, bright, colourful landscapes. You're talking about people who know that you use different styles of colour or different theme of colour depending to theme the different areas you're in. We're talking about great battles. We're talking about interesting story, an interesting storyline. We're talking about fun dialogue with various different characters. I mean, where do I even start with this game? And we're talking about these battles that are really strategic and a lot of fun. I mean, so many damn great things put together in this game, and it just hooked me, because I'd just go onto an area and explore and have fun, and I just want to go. That would just bring me to the next area, and I'd talk to more characters and everything. Boy, and I don't know. It's really hard. One of the things I loved about the game was that how compressed everything is, and that's not actually a good... Let me explain. In a lot of games, whether they mean to it or not, they end up having you trudging through this great big open plain that's not much fun, and you don't mind it because you're getting to the next part, but it's still not fun. Now, this game is great because you start off in the castle, and if you trudge a little further, you'll suddenly end up in a marsh, and if you trudge a little further in the other direction, you'll end up in this beach with pirates. If you trudge a little further in the other area, there's this dragon cave and stuff. It does a brilliant job of getting so many details, so many lush things into such a small location, which means that you don't have to, and it still manages to give a good sense of traveling a great distance, because in order to get from one area to another area that you haven't been before, you usually have to deal with all these sorts of monsters. And I don't know, there's a great sense of that there's a great sense of like trying to be strategic about how you move forward and everything, and exploring the great new lands. It feels like that there's a threat, but at the same time, if you're smart and you use the right amount of force, you can move forward well. And then the battles. I mean, I could go on about the battles. It's kind of this system where you've basically got a couple of. It's hard. You've got about like 5-6 different characters, but they're not characters. Each one represents basically an army of that specific type. So you could have one little piece that represents like a few dragons, and another piece that represents like 500 peasants, and like you command them to attack your enemy, and if your enemy attacks your guys, then it could end up like killing like a huge amount of your troops. So it's all strategic, because I mean, as the battle goes on, your own troops get worn down. So you know you want to go for a fast, decisive victory. But it's not even complex. Like I mean, everything's like hexagonal. You've only got about 5 units to keep track of, and you can. And that's another element of the game. You can decide there are some restrictions, and you know you have to gather, but you can actually build up and decide, okay, what sort of type of creatures do you want in each of my attack units? And I mean, moving them around the screen and attacking is really straightforward and easy. There's nothing tricky or micromanaging about it, but it's just so much fun. And pretty much any enemy that you battle in the game, you'll have an opportunity somewhere in the game to actually recruit that specific enemy in your own battle. And then, of course, the enemies. Boy, werewolves, vampires, dragons, practically griffins, peasants, archers, pirates. I mean, it's like the entire world is just a combination of a bunch of different cool fantasy genres. But it all works so well in each other. And you've got so many quests that are nice, fun little variations on pretty much established storylines and tropes. It's, oh boy. I mean, we're talking... And that is how I ended up spending several nights of my life awake playing King's Bounty the Legend until the break of dawn. Well, I suppose we should move on to our finale music now. And this finale music is literally called Finale, and it is from the video game Myst. Yes, Myst. I think a lot of you may know what that game is. It's one of the best-selling PC games of all time, best-selling video games of all time. Huge boosted the sales of the CD-ROM platform, was hugely successful even with non-gamers, blah-de-blah. Myst, for those who haven't played, is basically you open a book and you suddenly find yourself on an island. Those, apparently opening books is how you travel around in Myst. The island is got a really crazy design. It's got a mix of sudden Roman architecture, suddenly surreal architecture. Everything sort of like is things that are familiar yet thrown together in unfamiliar ways, and has things like a room with stars in the sky. But as you start walking around and interacting, you start to realize that this is all part of some complex puzzle that's going on. You fiddle with things, you move around. At the time, it had huge... brilliant pre-rendered graphics where everything looked stunning, and so many different variations. You played around, you check out different books, you start to gradually learn the history of the place, and just as you were beginning to get to grips with it, boom, you suddenly found that you could travel to different islands. There were a couple of different islands in the game, and each one had their own unique attributes. Each one had its own place, each its own atmosphere, its own items, and its own puzzles. But I think people tend to gravitate towards the first island, like the one that's displayed on most of the covers of the book, a small island that's this weird mix of crazy architecture and sunken boats and lighthouses, and all in such a small, and even a bronze rocket ship and gears that don't make any reason. It's like a mix between an art gallery and a surreal thing. But of course, you interact, you have fun, and it's the atmosphere is one of the great things about Myst. But it also, like I said, one of its strengths is how you try to work it out. You try to go to different places, fiddle with things, pick up... There's not much picking up stuff, but see how flipping one switch attaches the other. And of course, one of my favourite parts, just reading all these books, trying to make notes on a piece of scrap paper so you can go around and move forward in the game. I always just loved that sense of being there, of like there being a big puzzle to work out, of prodding little areas and going through, and every little success leading to a little more discovery and trying to figure that way out. And I mean, it's that sense of exploration, that sense that you're moving yourself forward and trying to figure it out and seeing all these disparate things and bring them together. I think that's definitely one of the big appeals of the game, and one of the reasons I love it. The music itself was composed by Robin Miller. He was one of the co-founders of Cyan, which developed Myst, and he stayed on and made the music for the next game, and Riven, until he then left the company. Cyan obviously went on making a couple of more sequels to the game, including one that's meant to be a massive multiplayer online video game, but unfortunately that never quite worked out. If I was a bit more of a fan, I'd really investigate it and look into it, but sorry, I'm to all Myst fans out there, I guess that was one of the one of the many, unfortunately, gaming trends that kind of passed me by. But Myst definitely is a great game. It's, like I said, maybe if you get overhyped so much, you might go in and find it's not it. But I think for me, it's just the atmosphere, the sense of being place. Sometimes I wonder if some rich billionaire somewhere might suddenly ask a bunch of workers to construct a reproduction of the Myst Island in some sea or lake or someplace. I wonder if it's already been done. But the point is, it's a classic game, and here's the ending music from it, provided that you followed your instructions, didn't utterly screw up. Because this is one of the nice little fun parts of the game, is dealing with a bit of a conflict between two brothers. So this has been, Bitnote with David Collins. Enjoy, and thanks for listening.